This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run, Julian and Xiao Ning with you. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to the KLCI opening and we'll bring you the numbers from there as well as some of the latest corporate news. For now, we're actually running a poll on our BFM account. How is your internet connection doing? Xiao Ning, what are we seeing from the results?
Well, we have more than 200 people who basically tweeted in their result, their findings. And there was a choice between normal, a bit slower, a lot slower, and not sure. And this is how is your internet connection during the MCO. So 41% have basically said, yes, it is slower. 29% said a lot slower. And only 26% people say it's like normal. So I don't know. I think, yes, there is a lot more usage because we are at home and everybody is either on YouTube or on Netflix or just checking out the news.
Or even having virtual meetings. A lot of people are actually having virtual meetings working at home. Now, just looking further into developments in the coronavirus area, China, the case count is slowing down. Europe and North America have become the new epicenters for coronavirus. But Southeast Asia has also seen a rapid escalation, raising concerns that the region with over 650 million people could be the next hotbed due to the close links with China. More than half of Southeast Asian nations, including Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore and Vietnam, had reported their first cases by late January. But Indonesia is where we are focusing now because the confirmed cases are far below the US and Italian tallies, but the death rate at around 8% is one of the highest in the world.
Now, a lack of preparation is likely making matters worse. Now, Indonesian officials had downplayed the threat before the country's first cases were detected on March 2nd. Now, as of today, Indonesia has recorded 2,738 positive infections and 221 deaths due to COVID-19.
So to talk more about this, we have Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow, International Institute for Strategic Studies on the line. Good morning, Aaron. Thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Now, which countries in Southeast Asia are considered the most at risk when dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic?
Top of the list is absolutely Indonesia. There are some countries we lack good data on, particularly Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar. But without question, Indonesia is in the worst position at the moment.
And if we compare the countries like what you mentioned, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand and Cambodia, how are their approaches differing in dealing with this crisis?
Well, Vietnam and Singapore have had a very similar approach. There's been a great deal of testing. Vietnam has a capacity for around 200,000 tests, and then a decision to isolate or quarantine those who have tested positive, and then isolate the close contacts of those who have tested positive. About half in Vietnam are in military-run quarantine centers. Singapore is, you know, putting people up in five-star hotels. It's a little bit of a different situation, but the tactics are very similar.
Now, the Indonesian Health Ministry is thinking about imposing large-scale social restriction. How do you see this working out, especially with Lebaran, or what we call Hari Raya, Idul Fitri in Malaysia, coming soon?
Well, actually, under the Indonesian presidential regulation that was issued, the health ministry does not impose the restrictions. It only gives permission to individual provinces to impose the restrictions. And Jakarta Governor Anies Baswedan has been asking for a number of weeks for the permission to impose these restrictions. He's strongly recommended some of them up until this point, but he hadn't had the legal power to enforce them until the health ministry gave him permission yesterday. And at this point, it's probably far too late. Many Indonesians living in Jakarta have already made mudik. They've already gone home because the prospect of earning an income before Idul Fitri is now quite slim. And because the government had this long extended deliberation period where it had been talking about banning mudik, people sort of got an early start before the government could actually ban them from going back to their home villages or instituting a sort of movement control order-like policy. So it's likely that the virus has already spread throughout the archipelago from Jakarta.
And Aaron, the numbers that have been officially reported, which are in their 2,000s plus, is that really very underreported and a function of the fact that there's very little testing being done?
That's exactly right. There's we can't have any confidence in the numbers that are coming out from the Indonesian health ministry. And if you look at the number of funerals that were held in Jakarta in just in the month of May, there were 41% more funerals held in Jakarta in the month of March, compared to any other month going back to January 2018. And the central government says that that's because there's a dengue outbreak, but that there's really very little credibility behind that argument. These are almost certainly COVID-19 deaths. And if you use the modeling that the UK Institute for Infectious Diseases has laid out, every one COVID-19 death is equivalent to somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 cases in the general population. So if you assume that those 1,300 excess deaths in Jakarta last month are due to COVID-19, that indicates that we're probably talking about somewhere in the ballpark of 1 million COVID-19 cases just in Jakarta. And remember, many of those Indonesians have already left Jakarta to go back home to their home villages. So we're talking about an epidemic in Indonesia on the scale of nothing like Southeast Asia has seen, probably closer to something like what we saw in China or the United States. Indonesia's healthcare system is not equipped to handle this in anywhere near the, it's not, it doesn't have the same capacity as the US or China.
And just looking at the pretty dismal statistics as far as healthcare is concerned, Indonesia health spending per capita is one-tenth of Singapore, and pretty low numbers in medical doctors as well as hospital beds. So we're expecting big problems in the healthcare system over there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably unfair to compare Indonesia to Singapore, but even compared to WHO guidelines, which suggests there should be one hospital bed per 600 in the population, Indonesia has one hospital bed per 6,000 in the population. And the numbers are even worse for ventilators and ICU beds. The number of doctors is lower than it should be. And it's better, relatively better, in Java, in Jakarta. When you get to the outer islands, it's even worse. So if you look at Papua with a population of 4.3 million, it only has 60 ventilators and two pulmonologists. So once the virus spreads beyond Java to some of the outer islands, the situation is going to be even more tragic than it is currently in Jakarta and Java.
And Aaron, if you look at the government's response, right, how has it been overall, both from a health perspective and also from an economic perspective?
Initially, the Jokowi administration, Jokowi himself, were very focused on the economic consequences of COVID-19. They didn't really accept the advice early on that this was likely to strike Indonesia. There was a suppression of testing. At one point, the health ministry, until about March 9th, required that all testing of COVID-19 go through the health ministry's central lab, Litbangkes. And as a result, there were very few tests being done. And the government was resistant to calls to expand testing. There are now 48 testing centers, but there still aren't very many tests being done, and there's a little bit of a mystery as to why that is. It seems that the government believes that if it doesn't look for COVID-19, then it can act as though there is no COVID-19. But it's a very short-term strategy. It was a very short-sighted strategy because COVID-19 is likely to overwhelm the Indonesian health system, and that's going to have a significant economic consequence on that system. But the economic growth numbers that we've seen from the Ministry of Finance, from the ADB, from the World Bank, are based on these official numbers, not on what's likely actually happening on the ground. So it's very difficult to see how Indonesia grows at, say, 2.3%, as the Ministry of Finance says it will this year. Those numbers are likely to be much lower, and the contraction may be on the scale of 1998, when Indonesian economic activity contracted by just over 13%.
And also in the Philippines, Aaron, deaths are surging and lockdowns are likely to be extended. What do you think are the policies there, especially under President Duterte, that is different from the rest of the region, and can they withstand this pandemic?
Well, you know, if you set aside Duterte's colorful language in terms of, you know, shooting people who violate the lockdown order on site, things like that, he was really pushed to institute a lockdown by some of the local leaders in the Philippines, who took measures into their own hands, like the mayor of Pasig. But it seems to be having, Philippines is in a different situation than, say, Malaysia, but it seems to be having a similar effect. The real X factor in the Philippines, the real question that we don't know yet, the answer to yet, is regards overseas Filipino workers. So 11% of the Philippines' GDP comes from remittances from overseas Filipino workers. Many of them are now not earning an income. Some of them are going back to the Philippines, perhaps carrying the virus with them. And when they get back to the Philippines, there's a huge problem with unemployment or informal sector employment. It's going to be very difficult for the government in its current fiscal situation to be able to provide for those individuals, particularly if the lockdown order persists. So the Philippines could be in for a very rough few months as well.
Thanks for joining us this morning. Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow with International Institute for Strategic Studies, giving us the update on the COVID situation in Indonesia and the Philippines. And we are heading into the news. And after that, we'll bring you some news from Bursa, Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.